Oh. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the big show. I'm Jeff Gamet. I'm your interim host, sitting in for Ewan Rankin. And the big smile you see on my face is because I get to hang out with these amazing people every Thursday, and I absolutely love it. I genuinely look forward to our time together every Thursday. So I'm glad to get to hang out with all of you. And with that, Patrice, how are you today?
I'm doing well. I'm doing, yeah, it's I'm very tired. We had a big medical trade fair in Europe, well, Germany, Berlin, this week. Just wrapped today. I wasn't there, but I still had to, like, with my teams, prepare everything for it, and it was a lot. So I'm done. And we had our quarterly planning on Tuesdays. So yeah, I'm just out of energy. But it's good.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah,
Well, I'm
weather
glad
is
you have enough
starting. Yeah.
energy to be here.
Oh, I always have enough energy to be here. That's what gives me energy. No, but the weather is really nice, and I think that's helping me a lot. Like, supposed to rain, but we'll see. Supposed to get cold again for a couple of days, which I'm not so happy about. But then that's it. Like, next week, I think, and then it's done. So, and it's a long weekend, so.
Of course it is.
Yeah, we have 1st of May as a public holiday in most of Europe, I think.
Yeah, they celebrate my
What is the
birth. That's what
holiday?
it is. My birth.
Oh, it's your birthday. Nice.
Yeah.
Good
Oh,
to
nice.
know.
That's what they celebrate. They celebrate my birth every
Yeah,
year.
totally. Totally
Every
makes
year
sense.
around the world, May the 1st is celebrated because Ian was born.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
Yeah,
Like,
that's what it
and I knew
is.
that.
But I get
Yeah,
a day off
that's.
this year. It's always nice when the bank holiday falls and my birthday's the day off.
And it's on a Monday, which is also really good.
Yeah, long
Yeah.
weekend.
Yeah. It's like, it's big. I don't know about the UK, but in at least the German speaking countries, it's quite big. Like, there's a lot happening around that. There's, like, a lot of, like, really old-timey things, like witches flying around and things
Oh,
getting
fun.
burned, and,
Yeah,
like,
well,
there's fires and stuff.
it's a pagan festival. There's
Yeah,
all
it's a pagan, exactly.
dance around the maypole and all of that. That was the traditional British thing with in the center of the village, there'd be the maypole and there'd be all the ribbons and people would dance around it and all that. And it's a pagan
In the
fertility
US,
rite, basically.
we call those riots. You call them festivals. It's
That's
different here.
different. No,
It's
that's
different
certainly
here. It's
different.
different here.
I had a really interesting discussion today with one of my teams. Like, as I said, like, they're part in Ukraine and part in Germany, and they were talking about this and in Austria. So we're talking about those traditions, like the maypole, and like it gets stolen, and then you have to buy it back with a lot of beer. That's a tradition here, like, especially in the more rural areas. Still, it's not happening too much anymore. I remember as a kid, like, we would go out and, like, do kind of the equivalent of a, like, trick or treat, like, thing. More tricks than treats, honestly. Like, we would hide things. I remember there was, like, when I was a kid, someone like, switched out the city signs between, like, two of the villages.
Oh,
So,
funny.
like, stuff like that, or turned them upside down, like, trash cans, like, disappear and you find them somewhere down the street or something, like, stuff like that. But it's happening less and less. I think it's gotten less and less popular over the years. But we talked about that. So yeah, it's a big weekend here. And I mean, yeah, you said it's a pagan thing. It's like, okay, let's drive out the winter. If summer is coming, let's get started.
I mean, we have a similar thing in Yorkshire called later in the year, which is called Mischievous Night,
Yeah,
which
it's
people go out
similar.
and do pranks and things. But over here, that's October the 30th. But I'm just looking at
Yeah, so I
the
put the name of
versions
it in the
of
chat. It's
Walpurgisnacht.
Walpurgisnacht, if you want to look it up. Walpurgis is, I think, a name of a witch or something. But,
Yes,
like,
I recognize that.
not like Salem witch trials and stuff like that. More like the old-timey story witches. Like, flying around and having fun and all of that. So I think
That's
the
awesome.
story goes that they meet up on a mountain and have, like, a big feast there and dance around the fire and stuff like that. So
Yeah, it's allegedly May Day 30th mm-hmm. October nowadays in the UK, because that kind mm-hmm. of is days before we tried to blow up a parliament. We celebrate mm-hmm. that on the 5th of November, kind of goes on with that. And so, yeah, it goes along with that one, really. But US has a Devil's Night, which is the same idea. Maryland mm-hmm. brought, up in, I'm sort of in the North, up in sort of the Salem, well, yeah, in Salem part, in the Salem part yeah. of sort of
yeah.
the US.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm.
Yeah, that's, as I said, that's the idea. So this is a big weekend.
Awesome. Mm. Well,
not for me. I don't care. But
I hope you still have fun.
I will relax. That's my plan.
That sounds excellent. Yeah. Ian, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I've spent my week preparing and then recording a video for one of our events. It's been fun. I never realized how much work goes into these ones where you've actually got to plan what you're going to say,
mm-hmm.
rather than ones where you just like, I come here and I talk to people and then I go away again. And these ones where we're trying to get a particular message, we've got a fixed amount of time to do it in, and we've got to try and get everything and not mumble, get diverted, right. Go off track.
Having a plan about what we're going to say, that's like, this is not this show. So,
no.
I have to say that if you give me a script, you've wasted your time. Because I guarantee you I will not read it. I guarantee you I will read it and I will read all the words in the wrong order. So it's generally best, tell me what I'm talking about, stand me up in front of people and I'm fine. Just don't give me a script. I just need, as long as I need to know what the points I've got to hit, and it's things I know about, lovely. Stick me there and I'll be the front man and wave my hands about and talk. But don't make me follow a particular script. It's just not going to work for you. But yeah, no, that was fun. That's been my fun. I think we're going to do another run of it tomorrow to make sure we've got it right. But yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hence why I was still asking Jeff earlier on about recommendations for a green screen. So we're thinking of using green screens, possibly if we need to, because the problem is we do a good job of it, then we give it to marketing. And when it happens, it disappears into that weird and wonderful world that is creative and marketing. They look at it and go, oh, now I can see this. No, that looks not right. And, oh, God, we've got to do it again. Yes. Oh, God. So waiting for that part to come next.
Yeah, and now you can appreciate the amount of work Apple puts into their release videos.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
To get that smooth. Well, I've done live ones, and that's fine. I did a live one earlier this year, and that's completely fine. But trying to record a canned thing and get the... And get the timings. The timings is the thing. We've got to find a few more minutes. And we realised we didn't do any outro either, so we're going to do an outro tour of, you know, the and thank you to I Mean Grant and this week and find me kind of stuff. Because we didn't do that.
You know, I did two Ignite presentations. And an Ignite, it's sort of like a mini TED Talk. The way Ignite works, it's a 5-minute presentation. You have 20 slides, they advance automatically, and it doesn't matter if you've lost your place or not. Those slides just keep going until you hit the end. And the amount of work that I had to put in both times that I did an Ignite presentation just for this 5-minute thing far exceeds by orders of magnitude the amount of work that I've put into the biggest and largest presentations that I have mm-hmm. ever done. It's amazing.
Who said that? There was like, there's a famous quote. Someone said something about like, sorry for the long letter. I didn't have time to write a short one.
Mark
Twain. Okay. Yeah. That's kind of, it's true.
Totally checks
it's
out.
It's true. Yeah.
It's true. Like anybody, I mean, I always tell that also to like, my teams when they're preparing something, it's like anybody can do like a long presentation.
Yep.
Right, doing it in 5 minutes.
I used to do the thing with my team. Okay, in this meeting you can only show one slide.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And they hated that because it's so hard to create one slide.
Or they create a slide with like 17,000 things on it.
Animations and everything. Then get it all in. Stack it in your layers, keep pressing the button, it keeps changing. It's only one slide.
Ah,
One slide. Nobody can read.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Tom, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Jeff. This is one of my favorite times of the year. I'm a sports guy, and it's NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, baseball season's going. So those are my three favorite sports, and they're all happening. So, and I'm retired, so I can sit in front of the TV starting at 4:30.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I was working, I would catch like the last 30 minutes of one game. Now I can watch two or three games while I'm doing other stuff once in a while anyway. So that's a lot of fun. I love doing that. And the other thing that is happening is, like a lot of other people, I was mentioning to Jeff earlier, I'm getting the whistling AirPods problem with noise cancellation or transparency mode on. So I might be driving over to Apple today.
Yep. Time Wait, to your visit wife the doesn't. Bar.
Yeah, your wife doesn't keep you busy. I have to talk to her about that.
She's actually out of town today for a couple days. Fine. So
okay.
So I'm
she didn't give you
vacation.
A to-do list. Like
I do have a to-do list. Actually.
Yeah. Oh, you've got a honey-do list.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a honey-do list, and I'm way behind.
I knew it.
My trick is always to get those out of the way on the first day. Then I have the rest of the 2 days or day I've got all to myself. So I try and get them all done quickly.
Well, why do it today if you can put it off until tomorrow, Ian?
Right.
So true. So true. Or the day after.
As Douglas Adams once says, I do love the sound of deadlines as they go flying by.
It so is true. It's a really satisfying whoosh sound.
Yep. Indeed it is.
Mm-hmm. So, as long as we're here, let's talk some news. And
Tom,
holy crap, Tom, you are fast.
Oh, I was seeing Ian's come up as I was hitting.
Yeah,
returns.
I don't know which one got there first. We've got
Tom's got there first.
Did he? All right.
Okay. My story for this week is about the Japanese attempt to land a vehicle on the moon. And I forget what they call it. Hakuto, I think, is the name of it. So it's a private company that was trying to land a vehicle on the moon, and it had a little rover with it, which is, I think, the most fun part of this story.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I hadn't realized this, but no private company had ever landed a vehicle on a foreign planet before. We see so many private company rockets, SpaceX and Virgin. What was the Virgin thing called? Galactica or whatever.
Yeah.
Virgin Galactic.
Thank you.
Virgin Galactic. Battlestar Galactica. Whatever.
Yeah. He's got his name.
And it looked like a really interesting mission. And you always hear the story of the people that had probably been working on this for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, and you're crossing your fingers that everything works, and most of the time it works amazingly. Most of the time these things work, given how complicated they are. Most of the time, yeah. And I was actually really disappointed that it sounds like it crashed because they lost communications with it.
Yeah. I guess it was accelerating.
Right.
In the last telemetry they got, that's a bad sign.
No,
that's a bad sign. So I'm not sure, what kind of rockets they had to slow it down, but my guess is either they were turned the wrong way or they didn't work. Something obviously didn't work.
Or they sent an AI with it and the AI committed suicide. Just like, why would I want to be on the moon? Like, that sounds kind of boring.
This is not going to be very fun.
I would rather kill myself. No, please don't.
I've never considered this before, but does anyone gatekeep who can access the moon in any way?
Nope.
I just wondered if there would be
even gatekeep our Earth atmosphere at all.
So
and
anyone
it's proven
can stick
by
anything.
What Elon Musk is doing.
Yeah, so anyone can stick anything out there, basically. Mm-hmm.
Pretty much.
So equally, anyone can go, all right, I fancy going to the moon. You pay NASA enough to get you out of the atmosphere and on your way.
Yeah.
Or just build your own rocket.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. There is an international treaty that says that Like governments can't claim the land on the moon
can't use it for military purposes, right? There's so many
But I mean that is kind of loosely.
Yeah, right.
Like an agreement. It doesn't mean that anybody's actually following it.
Right.
No,
right.
The Nazis have got a base on the back of the moon anyway. We know this.
Mm-hmm.
It was in that documentary. The Einstein documentary has that in it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's
in the Nazis
documentary
the
called
Einstein. The
yeah, there's Nazis on the back of the moon.
Mm-hmm.
So this one was launched by a SpaceX rocket. It wasn't the big one that blew up last week. It was a Falcon 9 rocket because the payload was fairly small. And it took, I think, 5 months. I think it launched in December. So it wasn't a hugely powerful rocket, but that was okay. It was a pretty small payload, and they didn't really care how long it took to get there. It wasn't like the 3 days of Apollo. And the other thing I thought was funny, I had read this actually before the mission. They had this little rover, and what was that ball thing in Star Wars?
BB-8.
BB-8, oh, yeah. Right? They had this little rover, and it kind of looked like the BB-8. It was looked like a ball, and it had some treads on it, you know, like a wheel. And I think it was going to take samples from the lunar dust and do a bunch of analysis. And the funny thing was, it was built by a toy manufacturer.
Tony. Yeah.
The same people that make Transformers.
Oh, yeah, by Tomy. Yeah, by Takara Tomy.
So
that kind of makes sense if you think about it.
Yeah, it's a similar thing, right?
Yeah.
I just thought it would be great if it was actually a Transformer.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of was.
Kids can be pretty rough with their toys, so probably similar.
Yeah, it's very robust.
I mean, it was kind of a Transformer.
Engineering will still be similar, won't it?
It was designed so that once it was deployed, it was going to open up from the ball shape,
right?
And so it was kind of a transformer.
And then it was pretty ingenious.
It was pretty ingenious and pretty cool looking. Mm-hmm. So it's too bad they don't, you know, they're not going to get a chance to use it. I'm not sure if they're going to try again.
The landing was a bit rough.
iSpace is working on their next lunar mission.
They have the funding. I'm not sure where they're getting their funding from. That's the question.
But I mean, I think every company knows that space is risky, and I mean, it might just blow up on the during launch or something, as we saw.
Yeah. I mean, there's two other companies according to that are also working on their own particular solutions. I mean, Astrobiotic and Intuitive Machines are going to plan to land on the moon this year, apparently.
Yeah,
I mean, looking at the picture of that lander, it does look like two packing crates and a load of scaffolding, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, there for sure has been a race to get back to the moon. I mean, NASA is planning it, like next couple of years, I think.
Right, Artemis, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 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 and I mean, yeah, exactly. And I mean, also not just the mission, but like the longer term plan is to actually have a base. Like kind of what we saw in, what was it called? For Mankind?
Yeah. All Mankind?
For All Mankind, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Lunar Gateway and all of that. So yeah, there's been a bit of a race recently.
I mean, it just makes sense for space exploration to have a base on a nearby planet, you know, that has some the moon that has some resources, you know, it doesn't have the gravitational problems, so launching from there is much easier, all those things. But it's going to take a long time to get something set up.
If you think about it, it's kind of like the sandbox, right? Like it has the dust that's kind of the sand. Play in it and you can figure things out, and like the advantage is it's relatively close by at least astronomical standards, so you can try a lot of things without going very far. If something goes wrong, I mean, you can either go there again or get it back or whatever. Like try again.
I mean, there's a lot of problems with space flight, the breaking out of the Earth's atmosphere, so you can get up there and get somewhere else where you've got a lower gravity. You've got more chance of launching and heading off somewhere else without the whole work of breaking out the ionosphere.
Mm-hmm. It definitely saves a lot of fuel.
Mm.
Right.
It does. I think that's the whole idea of Lunar Gateway, that eventually we will be able to launch from there, like the Mars mission and so on. Instead of like getting everything up there, like maybe we can do some assembly up there, even like on Lunar Gateway.
Right.
Because anyway, I mean, so I'll be... the resources are not the problem. Like, we have a lot of resources in the universe. We just have to get to them.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I'm looking forward to seeing what happens with their next project. And, eventually some company, private company, is going to successfully land. And it's just a matter of time. But, yeah, it's hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. All right. Ian, tell us about your story.
Mine's big news over here in the UK, at least, where, well, it is in the rest of the world now as well, to be honest. Our government, our Competition Commission, has stamped all over the toes of Microsoft and said, no, you're not buying Activision. Really, no, you're not. Because we're going to take too big a chunk of the cloud market. And we're concerned about it. You'll be over 60, 70% of it. We don't want you to have the rest. So, and it's also sparked a debate in our parliament now because of, well, surely we're turning away business that would bring money into the UK by blocking this deal. So that's interesting itself. It was worth something like, I think, is it $69 billion? There's some crazy, $69 billion.
Yeah.
For control of, the, I mean, and to be fair, there's some big properties there in amongst what they're after. The Call of Duty franchise being the big one. And then you've got Candy Crush and you've got World of Warcraft. All of those are under Activision's label. Those make massive sense to Microsoft to have control of, particularly to sort of stabilize the Xbox market. And then on top of that, they can control who has them, which is, I think, the fear of the outside is that PlayStation won't be able to get access to have those properties on theirs as well. Again, there's the risk. So this is interesting in terms of, and because the UK has blocked that deal, it blocks it globally too. It means they can't carry on with this anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft playing their small violin, saying we didn't want to hurt anybody. We're being very nice, but it's interesting, isn't it?
Well, Microsoft did say openly, and this is the sort of thing that lying about would be really, really bad. They said that they were committing to continuing to support the big titles on PlayStation, which is smart on a couple levels. First, it shows that they're not going to try and abuse monopoly power if you decide they're not monopoly yet with this.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But then you don't want to cut off the revenue from one of the biggest gaming platforms out there.
Well, you do, because I mean, you want to basically make all the other ones die, so the only one left is Xbox. Mm.
Well, yeah, I mean, sure, but if PlayStation is bringing in metric bucket loads of money, let metric bucket loads of money continue to come in while you're creating the whole image of look at how nice we are. Yes, we bought this company, but we're supporting everyone. And you do that for 5 years, maybe 10 years, and then suddenly it becomes unfeasible to maintain the multiple code bases. Therefore, you're going to have to drop the PlayStation
version. Yeah,
and then you make a metric bucket load in one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. I would be surprised. I would be very surprised if that didn't, after the current iterations of this code base, once they start, you know, oh, we're rationalizing the programming teams. We don't need five teams writing for different platforms. And you go back to the days of exclusivity of game can only be had on and it will be Xbox. You won't be able to get it on any of the other competing platforms.
Yeah, and the new titles. The new titles.
The new titles will only stay in. Yeah, so suddenly have.
Yeah, I think the deal with Sony is for 10 years. I think that was already
there
announced.
You go.
I think it's interesting that
it's just not feasible. Sorry. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that the market that they focused on was the cloud gaming market, not the gaming market.
Yeah.
That Microsoft already, the claim is, already owns 60 to 70% of the cloud gaming market.
Which probably makes sense. I mean, who is there? Like, Google shut down Stadia?
Mm-hmm. Right. Does Sony have something? Steam?
Yeah,
maybe?
No, I think the PlayStation
Sony
Network.
Has Steam or PSN. Yeah.
And the PSN and PSN PlayStation Network. So yeah. There's all of that. But I mean, the biggest one is still Xbox Live, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or whatever it's called
Microsoft
now. Or whatever it's called now.
Definitely. Definitely biggest.
Or whatever it's called nowadays. But it was called Xbox Live when I was a teenager that had it.
Let's be honest. The reason the UK government is doing that has nothing to do with facts, has nothing to do with Microsoft owning the cloud market, and has everything to do with politics and just
everything
pissing
to
on
do
someone.
With politics.
Right.
Yeah. Everything to do with pissing on someone's shoes. Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. There's lots of uproar now about, are we chasing away business? Because the other longer term thing is, are we chasing away business coming to the UK? Because potentially they couldn't be, they couldn't grow and be taken by another company and grow outside of where they are here, because again, competition is a bit of people go, no, we can't do that. You know, that's a fear. It's bad for Britain.
I think you did that. Was it 7 years ago?
Yes, yes, we made a really stupid mistake 7 years ago, and no one yet admits it's wrong. It'll take some time, and eventually we will admit it's wrong. But it's still yet.
Well, I think haven't there been other countries that were sort of wavering on approval of this
Europe,
deal?
Europe was as well, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Europe was as well. It wasn't just us. The EU were too.
Again, for mostly like political reasons. It is, I mean, no matter where you go in the world right now, it is quite common and quite popular to bash big tech companies. Whether that's correct or not is a separate story. But
We've just been doing that, haven't we?
Yeah,
I mean the thing about this is as we the competition markets are right, when they blocked the Activision deal here, it blocks it globally because it's so intertwined with every other market. The EU and the US decisions are nullified as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, so and in the US, the Federal Trade Commission last year they started the process here for challenging the merger. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this is a pretty steep uphill battle that Microsoft has.
It probably won't be too long until Microsoft announces that they're walking away from the deal. It doesn't look like they have a chance.
Yeah, no. And I mean, they can just build it themselves. It was probably cheaper to buy someone, or for sure it was cheaper and easier to buy someone. Mm-hmm. But it's not as if Microsoft can just expand their business and
They can take that $68 billion and spend it.
Right.
It's just amazing. We're talking about acquisitions that are in the tens of billions of dollars. I mean, gaming is a big market. It makes sense. Sometimes we forget how big of a market gaming is.
You have to think about that. That means that Microsoft is expecting to make back more than that.
Right.
Over time. I mean, sure, there's like some part of it is probably like the people and whatever other assets they have, but eventually they're thinking they're going to make that back over.
Yeah, yeah. When you do an acquisition, any kind of an acquisition, there are spreadsheets you fill in that show the outline revenue, the cost, and basically the return to investors over the next 10 to 15 years. Now, I'm sure something at this level of acquisition has done a decision at a very high level at Microsoft.
Oh, sure.
I mean, and it's not just they got to get the $68 billion back, because that would be a net zero. You have to show that you're going to get 10x that over 10 years. Otherwise, why do it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a staggering amount of money.
Yeah, exactly. It used to be that like a billion for Instagram was a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Remember we went crazy for that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, also just recently, another gaming property that's still massive even now is Rovio and Angry Birds. They've just been picked up by Sega.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still plenty of money in the gaming market, one way or another. I mean that deal was worth 700 million euros.
700 euros.
£625 million. That's an incredible amount.
Companies, big companies like that always buy someone. Like that's a constant, like couple acquisitions a year at least. But I mean, honestly, there's always, for me, there's always a question, like, do they really need to grow? Like, from a company perspective, I totally understand it. Like, I mean, that's their kind of their business to, like, that's what economists expect on constantly growing. But from, like a societal perspective, from my perspective, I'm like, do we really want that? Do we want big companies like that, that constantly grow and gobble up the smaller ones and so on and get bigger and bigger?
Well, as consumers, I'm inclined to say, no, we don't want that. Mm. Looking at it from the perspective of capitalism in general, that's exactly what capitalism was. Yeah. You keep absorbing competition. And,
until you are left. Yeah.
Yeah. Then that's not, I mean, that's not good for us.
No, that's not good for us. And I had no idea that Sega was buying Rovio. So now I know that too.
I'm looking at my stories and I'm like there's too many good stories this week. Like, I mean, I have three stories that are related to Elon Musk in some shape or form. Like, I mean, the whole like SpaceX Starship blowing up and the environmental disaster that is, or the like Elon Musk claiming that because of deepfakes, like he shouldn't be compelled to like go in front of a judge. I'm like,
what? Yeah, I saw that one.
I'm like, there is like the European market authorities just named Twitter and a lot of other big companies as one of the platforms that must report like how they use algorithms and AI and so on. But I think the story I want to talk about is BuzzFeed news.
Like, okay.
The whole BuzzFeed news shut down, because that is interesting to me, like, and probably to you, Jeff.
Yes, but the whole BuzzFeed shutting down thing was, on one hand, expected, but on the other hand, the when and how was unexpected. Mm-hmm. I mean, eventually BuzzFeed was either going to have to change into something else or go away.
Yeah, but I mean, why? Like, I mean, it used to be massive. I mean, BuzzFeed News was like, I mean, it was probably one of the biggest outlets, I think, out there, like other than the, let's say, traditional New York Times and Wall Street Journal and so on, like on the online side, at least.
Yeah, it's okay. So BuzzFeed's history is, to me, is really fascinating, because it was perceived initially as more like casual fluff news sort of thing, but then they started doing this really hard hitting news, and I mean they did some great stuff, and the problem that I was seeing is the same problem that all of the other news platforms are having, which is revenue through advertising. Mm-hmm. And that's just become so much more difficult to make happen. And and then you have the capitalist thing where you have companies merging together. Mm-hmm. And let's use just the general tech news space as an example. It used to be there were like hundreds of really good online news sources, and they were just hitting whatever niche you needed. And then New York Times, Wall Street Journal, the big news
old school
outlets, the old school news outlets, they realized they were leaving money on the table because they weren't covering this content. So they started their own tech rooms. Mm-hmm. And the money that was going to the smaller news organizations immediately diverted to the big news organizations, because that's where the return on investment was really going to happen.
Yeah.
And it just started choking all of the players out of the space.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think Christina Warren said it on, like, I don't remember where, but she said, I mean, it was basically BuzzFeed and like Mashable and a couple others. They were all trying to become New York Times, basically, before the New York Times became an online publication.
Mm-hmm.
That was the goal. And unfortunately, the New York Times was faster.
Yeah, and a couple other publications got their act together online too. Mm-hmm. Not many. A lot of them have died off.
Yeah, not many. Yeah. And it's sad.
What else does BuzzFeed do besides the news?
They own the Huffington Post.
Oh, they own the Huffington Post.
Yeah, and that's what they're keeping. So they're shutting down, like BuzzFeed in itself actually still exists, but not BuzzFeed News, because they're keeping Huffington Post, and they're like, or have already let go basically the entire BuzzFeed News.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that it's just very interesting. I mean, there have been like a bunch of magazines that shut down recently. I mean, this has been happening for the last, I don't know, 15 years probably.
Yeah, I saw something in the last couple weeks saying that the last two print computer magazines have stopped their print versions. So there's now no longer any print computer magazines anymore.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Germany still has one.
Yeah, we still have a few here. There's still newsstands with it, and there's still print print computer PC Pro. Barry Collins, who used to come on here a few years ago, he was the editor of that. And that was still going to my last recollection.
Maybe that's one of the ones that just or is now shutting down. It was PC something, and I can't remember which one. And then there was Mac Life.
Yeah.
And but so they're done or in the process of.
I think they published the news was that they had published the last print cover issue.
But I wonder if places like BuzzFeed News die, and other places that people were used to getting news basically for free, if they all kind of go away because they don't have any kind of a viable funding model, is that going to force people to actually more people to pay for subscription? Pay fees to news sites. I mean,
I don't think so.
I mean, at some point, if these sites kind of come and go sometimes, but if you don't have a viable long-term plan, because it's expensive to have writers, good writers doing reporting, that's an expense that you can't do from a GoFundMe or a Patreon account, you know?
Oh, there is plenty of places, like even with like VC funding or trying, like basically
the model
is get like really like cheap, crappy writers and put something out there and kind of,
or you get
that way, make a lot of money, basically.
Or you get the Post thing or Blue Sky or whatever, where you do the micro payments, you pay 10 cents for.
Oh, yeah. That has been tried so many times. Everybody getting together and doing it, it's not going to happen.
I just wonder if there's going to be some kind of rebound where people will be willing to invest. I've seen a couple local papers here. There's a, you might have seen it on Mastodon, the Mission Local, which is a local, very small local newspaper. It used to be a newspaper in San Francisco. And they look like they've pivoted to online pretty well. And people are starting to subscribe. And, you know, it's a very small fee. It's like $1 a month or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see like three models that will survive. The local, like, let's call it artisanal newspaper, where you have I don't know, your friends, your area, your city, something like that, that fund you, even if it's not a lot of money, but it keeps you afloat. It's kind of the Patreon model, basically.
Right.
Here in Boulder, that's called the Boulder Beat, and Shay Castle runs the whole thing herself.
Can't be too big, because if it's too big, it's not going to survive. It either gets eaten up by the big ones or it dies. Then there's the big ones, like the Wall Street Journal ones, on like the big, big money, old school like things. I think they're going to survive because they have a network of like rich people that can keep it afloat. And the third one is government funded, some shape or form. I mean, which is in Europe quite common. I mean, the BBC is a prime example. Germany has like a couple, it's like news organizations, basically. Austria has one, and they're right now talking about like they're going from a per device charge, Wait, like if you have a TV or a radio, you get charged to a per household charge where basically everybody pays. And it's mandatory. And like there's no way to get out of that other than if you're like if you earn like under a certain limit, then you might get out of it because you can't afford it anyway. But like most people will pay. And Germany has done that very successfully. Yeah, it's a tax basically. It's government funded.
Mm-hmm.
Which you know like was you the say, whole thing that Elon did. Like
the idea of having a small, you know, 1, 2, 3 person shop to do local news is very viable. Yeah. I think, you know, you need at least a couple of people and you can probably get enough funding to pay them a wage. But, you know,
The cool thing about that is, I mean, back in the day, that used to be still quite expensive. I mean, I've put out newspapers, like school newspapers and stuff, and I know like how expensive it was. And like these days it's easier because I mean all you need is a website, a decent server, and a couple and the writers and people that put the content out. That's made way salaries. Cheaper.
Yeah.
That's way cheaper than like having to print them and like get them out there and all of that.
Right. Who was it? Mm-hmm. Was it Ben Thompson or one of those guys said at some point we figured out that what the business of newspapers was selling you paper with ink on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Selling you advertisements.
Yeah. As a delivery vehicle for advertisements.
It was advertisements.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And then you had news stories in there to supplement the advertising.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, and of course,
I think every newspaper is in a sense that way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so now you have a model where, as you say, the upfront, the overhead cost, physical cost is no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not that expensive to have a website and all that kind of stuff. But I think the thing that I miss the most, and we get a little bit, is the people that are telling me doing the investigative reporting on, what's happening with the so-called tech exec that was killed by some random person in San Francisco. Well, it turns out it wasn't a random person. And if we didn't have reporters that were going to the police stations, to the DA, you know, walking the halls, we probably wouldn't have heard about that for a couple of months.
Mm-hmm. If at all.
If at all.
Yeah, and I think that's a problem like the mid-sized news outlets ran into. They got bought up by the big guys and then they didn't care anything at all about the local.
No.
I mean, honestly, most big newspapers out there, like the traditional ones, they post the same stories. Like
stories. They're all from the same sources. They're from the New York Times, the Associated Press in the U.S., the Associated Press,
AP,
or whatever.
Reuters, like the big news organizations. So.
Yeah, frankly, the only reason I have a subscription, I have a digital subscription to the San Francisco Chronicles for the sports because they actually still have local reporters that report on the teams.
Thanks.
But most of the news, and they have a couple of local reporters that do a pretty good job, but it's less and less people every week. But anything outside of San Francisco Bay Area is all taken from other sources, which I could read online somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you have a single corporation buying up
the
local news outlets, you lose your local coverage because
absolutely.
It's not financially viable for them to have all of these news agencies or outlets. Yeah. You just have one and then dump everything everywhere.
Yeah,
viewpoint. It's just cheaper to just do it once and then just dump it out everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we see that here in the U.S. with local television and radio stations. I mean, there's probably a handful of companies. Yeah, there's a hand, and you know, there's the Salem Radio that owns all the AM stations, the right, you know, conservative talk shows. You know, I think in the U.S. was it in the mid '80s when they changed the laws about how many media outlets a company could own in one region, and just it went crazy. You know, 5 or 6 companies probably control the majority of the media in most markets here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And 5 or 6 people probably own most media companies in the world.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
yeah. So I mean, bad for BuzzFeed, bad for the other companies. I mean, 2 hours was one I was thinking about. Like,
right? How long are they gonna last?
I still miss. I mean, 10 years almost. I still
right.
miss them.
Is it been right? Yeah. Has it been that long?
That was sad. The way like the whole 2 hour thing happened.
Yeah.
Mm.
But we could all see it coming, as did the people that were working at 2 hour.
Yeah, I think it was like 2015, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
14, definitely last Macworld, they were still around, so probably 15, so ideas.
Yeah, that was a sad and unfortunate loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm pretty sure people, like some people will miss BuzzFeed. I honestly didn't care too much about them. I mean, there was... I think wasn't BuzzFeed News the site that made the listicle popular, like 15 things that whatever.
Yeah, they would
15 things that British people complain about.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. That was part of their
10 things you must do on your iPhone today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Ten settings you must.
Ten things you will miss because BuzzFeed News is not around anymore.
10 things to do once you're laid off from BuzzFeed.
I think they either invented that or at least made it popular, because I mean, now it's everywhere, like everybody's mm-hmm. doing it.
Yeah, and it's good for SEO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, that's another thing that destroyed a lot of pages.
Sad. Yeah. It's mm-hmm. this is why everyone's so frustrated when they go to look up a recipe online. The people that are putting recipes online, they don't want to write that whole big 1,000-word essay before you see the recipe. They have to do it, because if they don't, their articles will be too short and Google will rank them down in SEO. And so you have,
or it doesn't have the right keywords in it, and so it doesn't show up right.
Don't you find yourself, when you click on a link that you found through Google search or wherever, you just automatically skip the first three paragraphs?
Oh yeah, there's even plugins. Yeah. There's plugins these days for your browser that basically just take you to the to the recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I need that, because it's beginning to get me drive me mad. And I think, if there's a recipe online for that? Oh god, what have I got to read now the screen about your life before I can find out which one's good?
Mm.
Yep, and the people writing those hate it as much as you hate reading it.
I've written some of those, yes.
Guardian, I mean, The Guardian's one of the great places to find good articles on. If you look for their ultimate recipe for insert food stuff here, those are really good. And the fluff is comparing recipe rather than trying to formulate the best, and rather than it being some nonsense in order to fill in the number of word count, which is, and so those are really great. Recommend those highly.
Hmm. Yeah, the whole fluff thing, just so frustrating. But you know what isn't frustrating? TSO hosts.
Oh,
so true. TSO hosts is awesome because they are doing just an amazing thing for us. They are giving us the bandwidth we need so we can stream shows to you every single week. They're giving us the hosting space we need so that there's a place for the website to live, and so that there's a enough storage for the show files so you can watch or listen to episodes whenever you want. How can they do this? Well, it's because this is what they do so well. They provide hosting. They help people buy domain names, and they have awesome customer support to go along with all of that. If you want an example of how rock solid stable they are, just look at the BTN website. It does not go down, and it always loads fast. So they're leveraging what they do so that we can do what we do. And without their incredibly generous support, we would not be here. And that is not hyperbole. The resources it takes to do this are far beyond what we would be able to come up with on our own. So their generosity is allowing us to be here and hang out and chat with all of you. So we really appreciate that TSO Host is doing that. Now, what you can do to show that you appreciate TSO Host is supporting us, go on your favorite social media and let them know that you appreciate that they're supporting BTN. So just something like thank you TSO hosts for supporting the British Tech Network. And that's it. That's all you need to do. But my guess is that at some point you're going to come up with a brilliant idea for a website and the most awesome domain name to go along with that. And when you do, go to TSO hosts, buy your domain name there because they make it so easy, and set up your website there because they make it so easy and it'll be a stable platform. Get all that stuff in your cart and then add in the discount code BTN20 and you'll get 20% off your order. So not only are they being incredibly generous by helping the British Tech Network be here for you right now, they're giving you a deal on setting up your own website simply because you're a BTN fan. So thank you, TSO hosts, for being here. And Patrice, I would love to lean on you today and ask you if you would please tell people where they can find the chat.
Oh, totally. I will gladly do that. So we have a really awesome live chat. If you're listening to this live, which you can do every Thursday at 7 p.m. UK time for the Big Show. And by the way, if you're into the Apple side of things, we have the Mac Show Fridays, 4 p.m. UK time. Show times sometimes change. So please consult our social medias or the website to check that. And then you just head over to chat.britishtechnetwork.com. And you're in and you can see like all the cool links that we're posting, the other bits and pieces that we see, like the awesome people in the chat, all of that. So let's say like you can't listen to this live, you're listening to this in the recorded form, which is totally fine. That's what podcasts are for. That's why we record this and why we post this. Like my Tom and Ben are so awesome to post it on our, and Jeff as well, I think. So awesome to post it on our website. And then you can listen to it in your favorite podcast player choice. Like, totally fine. You can still see at least what was said in the chat, what we posted in links and so on. Of course, you can't live chat with us unless you have some sort of time travel device and you can, or like subspace something.
Temporal conduit.
Oh, that sounds awesome. Yeah. So let's use that. So if you have a subspace temporal conduit, and you can live chat with us, but most people I don't think have that, so unfortunately can't do that. You can still at least see what we posted in there. And in order to do that, you head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat, and then there's a little calendar that pops up. And you have to select the date. And you select today's date, today as we're recording it, not today as you're listening to it. I mean, it might be in 50 years or 50 years ago, for all we know. But yeah, just select today's date, which is the 27th of April, 2023. And then you can see everything that we've talked about.
Awesome. Thank you, Patrice. You rock.
Thank you.
All right. And
what was that?
Subspace temporal conduit.
Yeah.
That sounds painful.
Well, it's
probably against the, what was it, temporal accords?
Oh, I'm certain it's against the temporal accords. And it can be painful. But if you reverse the polarity on the neutron transducers, it's a lot smoother.
The tachyon transducers.
Reverse the polarity on the tachyon transducers, and it actually smooths the ride out and gives you better precision when you're dropping yourself out at specific temporal conduit. I just forgot the simple word, coordinates, temporal coordinates.
So you realize I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. But you know, tachyon is the name of an AMD processor, right? The tachyon.
It is.
Did they get it? Is it? I assume you're giving me a Star Trek reference, right?
Yes.
Oh yeah, I'm totally putting together techno babble speak, inspired by Star Trek.
So does that mean that the AMD Tachyon was named for a Star Trek thing?
Probably.
Or is...
I never knew that may have been. Yeah.
Yeah. How about Ryzen, their processor? Is that a Star Trek thing?
Is that a planet? Oh no, that's Ryza, the pleasure planet.
That's a planet. That's a different planet.
Okay. I won't ask any more questions.
Oh, ask away. We didn't even start talking about the little sculptures you can get on Ryza that you carry around and let everyone know that you're DTF.
Yeah.
I'll look up DTF.
And now Tom's
later.
Like, now I have to do a Google search on DTF.
I am.
And I have to do it in a private browser just in case something weird happens. Yeah.
Just watch out for those Ferengi.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
This is not Trimble. Yep. This is not in Tribbles anyway, because there's always trouble with Tribbles. No.
Well, yeah, you should be careful with
it. I know what a Tribble is. That was in the original series.
As long as you keep them away from the Quadrature to Kaylee, you're probably... Well, I mean, no, I mean, they're born pregnant, so...
Yeah, you have to be careful.
Yeah.
Don't feed them. You have
to be careful.
I'm sorry, are we still on? Is this in English still? Hello?
Yeah.
No, we switched to nerd.
Yeah. Yeah, we're speaking fluent nerd now.
Yeah. Very. That's fun.
All right. Well, we should probably do some cool things too. So who has the first one?
It's gonna be me.
And that would be Patrice.
Wow, I'm faster than you. I was waiting for you. Okay. Third book. Third book in the series. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you should listen to the last two big shows, because I picked a big book series. Wow, that's a hard word.
Say that again, Patrice.
I picked the book series in the last couple shows. It is by Naomi Novik. It's the Skolomance series, three books. And this is the last one, called The Golden Enclaves. So it's basically Elle, the main character. She's a witch, I think. Something magic, I don't remember. And she finally graduated the school and is out and has survived, and everybody has survived. And yeah, she has plans, and they don't go as she wanted to, as plans usually go. Because she discovers there is a really, really dark secret behind the enclaves that are out there, like the rich people who built like really fancy places for wizards and so on. And like, there's a deep, dark secret that nobody talks about, nobody can talk about, actually, that goes back like a couple thousand years. And she decides to fix that. And how she does that, it's quite interesting. It's a really beautiful book. It really ends really nicely. And I cried at the end. It was really beautiful. It was a good story. Like, it has a nice ending. Gets dark in between, but there's a nice ending. So highly recommended. Third book in the series.
Awesome. All right. Well, my fun reading list keeps getting longer because of you, Patrice.
Good. That's my goal in life. Like, to get, always recommend books. I like all the time, and to get people to read like interesting things.
That's awesome. Cool. Okay. Then the next is Tom, you.
My cool thing is Tile for Cats. You remember Tile Trackers? They're owned by somebody else now. And the reason this caught my eye is we used to have a cat that was an indoor-outdoor cat. And he would just kind of wander the neighborhood at specific times, you know, during the day, and then come in to eat dinner, and then we'd keep him in. We wouldn't let him out at night. Once in a while, it would, you know, roll around to be dinner time, and we couldn't find a cat. Now we're searching the neighborhood, and Teresa and I are freaking out trying to find a cat because you know, we have bobcats and things around here. It's not a good thing for a cat to be outside at night. And so he spent many nights, you know, maybe once every 3 or 4 months, having to find a stupid cat. And I always thought, I wonder if these, when Tile is out, I wonder if Tile will work. But the problem is, it's just Bluetooth. So, you know, you have to get within 50 or 100 feet of the cat. And I'm not sure it's actually accurate enough to actually lead you to the cat, even if you're within 50 feet. So I'm not sure these things work. But they are marketing them now as cat trackers. And they have one that they have different prices for different ranges and loudness of the ring. So at least, I guess, you, if you got close enough, you detected it from Bluetooth that the cat was within 200 feet, you could turn on the ring and hear the ring from the cat's collar. So next time we get a cat, and if it's an indoor and outdoor cat, I'm definitely going to buy one of these. So, you know, at least when I get within a couple hundred feet of this cat, I can hear it ring. And I'm wondering why it took him so long to do it.
We've got one on our cat. We've had one for a long while now. We've had it's made by a company called WeNect, and they're available in Europe. I'm not sure if we can't get those in Europe, because I just looked to see what it was like, because we're talking about changing ours. Ours has got it's a GPS tracker, and it's got a SIM in it. So it connects back to the mothership and then reports back to an app on our phones. So right, if we lose the cat, we can find it.
How much do you have to pay for that, though?
Oh, I can't remember what it is now. It's not very much. It's a few pounds a month to keep the system active. It's not masses.
Right. So they have those here, too, the GPS ones, but then you have the monthly fee. You know, these things are like $25 or $30, and there's no recurring fee associated with them.
These will give you better tracking than you think if you're in an urban area or suburban area, and that's because of Amazon Sidewalk.
The other phone. Sidewalk.
Yeah,
oh,
because
right.
Tile has partnered with Amazon.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
No use if you're whatever in the mountains somewhere in Colorado.
Yeah.
Cat gets lost in the mountains in Colorado, it's
there's no sense going on. There's no sense looking for it.
Yeah, it's probably in some other animal's belly already.
Yes.
Right. You'll be tracking a mountain lion now.
Yeah. Well, that's also a cat, so yeah.
That's the bigger one, yeah.
You didn't specify which cat you wanted to track.
Yeah, I mean, eventually you'll find your tracker, but it's going to be in a pile of poop.
Yeah, you know, reduce, recycle, reuse, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That little tile will get reused.
I was just thinking what could cats do with this tracker? Like, what mischievous things could they do?
Take them off is the usual one they try.
Well, yeah. Yeah, like, right, no, right. Like, put it on a mountain lion and then watch the human.
Right.
No, a cat would put it on a dog, because dogs are goofy. So.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah.
And easier to get, like, a tracker on a mountain lion.
Right.
The dog would probably take it and say, oh, thank you. Nice gift.
Yeah, it's got run over, so we put one on it so we can find the damn thing. If it got run over again.
Mm-hmm.
She's bionic now. She's got titanium bits in the back of her leg. She's got rebuilt. She's fine. But
$6 million cat?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, the $6 million cat. Yeah, I always say she's bionic. So, yeah. And so, yeah, we got one of these things. The one that we've toyed with changing to, a couple of people have recommended, is the Apple disc things, whatever they're called.
AirTags.
Yeah.
Yeah, Apple actually specifically says that you're not supposed to use it for tracking pets.
I have a friend who uses one on his bike, and he says it's brilliant. I've got and he also has one in a few other places. And around us, there's enough Apple tech being used.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Compared to where she'll be.
And you probably don't have mountain lions.
And we don't get mountain lions, and we can pretty much sure we can track her, because she doesn't go very far. But when she does, the little bugger's hiding in one of the many things that she can find in next door's garden, which she considers hers.
Well,
the next door neighbor knows it's hers as well.
It is hers.
It is hers, yeah. And the next door neighbor knows it's hers. I mean, they both agree on this.
So, Ian, tell us about your cool thing.
My cool thing is very, very geeky. And also a bit AI-y as well. So I found
a bit
an
AI-y?
Article. Yeah, because it's a little tool called AI Chat. So it's a command line tool you can install on your Mac via Brew, or if you've got Unix, you can grab it via one of the repositories, and there's a Windows executable. And it simply will connect you to ChatGPT. And then via command line, you can simply type, tell me this, and it will give you an answer. And I've been playing with this week, and I found it really handy. I've been creating some other stuff I've been doing, I've been creating some copy. And I wanted to quickly check a few facts. And using that, I can just say, what's this? Give me, so I can get like a Muggle definition of something. And it's really helpful just to get a quick, tell me about this. You know, it will give me a little bit of detail. And I've been really impressed with it for what it does, convert, and you know, obviously do conversions and stuff. But it's called Chat AI. It's about, or give me a recipe for this food stuff, and it'll again generate.
The cool thing is, you can include that in your scripts, like in your even like shortcuts and stuff.
Yeah. I'm going to try and build something around it so I don't have to have a command line open, but I'll see what I can do more with it. But for now, I mean, I'm very happy just throwing commands at it. You can do more with it than I'm doing with it. You can get it to link between your questions. So recommend me a movie. What's the top 10 movie? What's the review of that last movie? And then it will connect up its searches, if you like, if you want to be a bit more conversational with it. I'm not bothered. I want a Muggle's definition of this, or a set. You know, I always want to define the, and it gives me, it spits out some, I can compare to what I'm looking at the minute. I'm creating a wiki for some stuff, and I want some real basic Frasals guys. I want real basic nuts and bolts descriptions of something that I can compare to what I've got here, that I've written, to make sure I'm somewhere right and I'm not gone too techie. And it's been quite helpful for that, just giving me a second counterpoint.
Not going to lie, when you posted the link, I thought it had to do, it was a cat-related link.
The second one down here is that's the weakness. But yes, this is the
No, because, it, because, you know, chat is
a cat. Chat, of course, is French for cat. Yeah.
Exactly. And I was like, a French AI cat. Interesting.
Le meow.
Yeah.
Welcome to the French AI cat show. I love
it. Yeah. All right. So that's cool. All right. So my cool thing, I'll preface this with, I'm really good with plants, but I'm horrible with succulents, and I don't know why. So I have solved my issue with not being able to manage succulents very well.
I suck at succulents.
Yes. And my solution to having really nice looking succulents all the time turns out came from Lego. Lego has a kit where you build 9 succulents, and each is in its own little pot. And so you can arrange them however you want, and they will not die because it's Lego. So it's $50 for this kit that has 9 succulents in it. And what they did, in case you want to like build with someone else, they broke the instructions up into 3 books. So you and 2 friends could get together, each takes a book, you get the bags of bricks for the book that you have, and you can all sit there and build up succulents. So I ended up building all of them myself and absolutely loved it. So I grabbed 3 of them off my shelf, and
those are nice.
Yeah, and you know, they all just stick together with pins, so you can arrange them however you want.
And they're quite big, actually.
Yeah, nice. They're bigger than you might expect, and for most of these are actually pretty close to actual size. So they're just really nice little builds. So what I did was I took one set of instructions and built 3 of them one night, and then some other night, like a week or two later, when I was feeling just a little stressed after having to crunch through some deadlines, I pulled out the next set of instructions, built three more. So I actually built all nine of these over the course of like 2 or 3 weeks. And it was just a nice little Zen thing. And when I was done, I had all my little Lego succulents. So this makes a nice addition to my Lego bonsai.
And, a new way to do Zen gardening, huh?
It's a great way to do Zen gardening. Yes. And I'm not having any trouble keeping my Lego succulents alive.
Alive. You're not overwatering, are you?
I'm probably overwatering. But the problem is when I try and address that, then I end up underwatering. Mm-hmm. I cannot seem to hit that sweet spot in the middle.
Yep. I mean, I've literally killed like a cactus in my life. So
I've killed
by not watering it. By not watering it.
You don't need to water it. Oh, that's fine. Leave it over there.
How do you kill a cactus? Like,
a year later, I'm like, oh, I should have probably watered it at some point.
That's, yeah. Now,
I mean, to be fair, I was like 8 or 9, maybe.
Still, but yeah. Yeah, so in contrast, behind me, mm-hmm. that bamboo is probably close to 20 years old now. And when I bought it on a whim at the grocery store, it was in this tiny little vase. Mm-hmm. It was just a little mm-hmm. chute. And the vase was like not hardly any bigger than a shot glass. Mm-hmm. And I still have that little vase sitting somewhere. But my bamboo continues to grow. I've upgraded its container a couple times. It needs that to happen again because it continues to grow. There you go. And so and in the chat, Ben is saying that the Lego bonsai was gifted to his mother-in-law's partner, hasn't made it over the last couple of years. Holy crap. Yes.
Ben, holding on to it for 2 years?
Just go get it. Steal. And build it. Steal. The Lego bonsai is a wonderful build. And it has so many cool techniques to make the little trunks and branches. And I love that the little blossoms and leaves. Frogs, they use the little frog element and it works beautifully. And it comes with two sets of leaves. So you have the regular green, but then if you want to do like a spring cherry blossom version, it has a complete second set of pink leaves for that. Wow. And both look great.
So Ben, I think 2 years is beyond the statute of limitations. You can take your mother-in-law's partner's Lego kit and build it. I think that would be mm-hmm. legal.
That's yeah. absolutely legal. And if they have a problem with it, tell them I said it's okay.
Okay. That would be the correct way.
Yeah.
This is the way, as they say.
This is the way. Yes. And and with that, Patrice, where can people find you?
Well, you can... Well, if you have a, what was it, subspace, temporal something? I've forgotten already what it was.
Subspace, temporal conduit.
Conduit, yeah. If you have one of those, then you can find me every week here on The Big Show on Thursdays and also on The Mac Show on Fridays. Actually, you don't need a conduit at all. You can just head over to BridgeTechNetwork.com and show up. Yeah, but if you want to know more about what I do, like the projects, the podcasts, the social media links, all of the good things, you can find on my website, thepatrice.com, because there's only one. And if you want to listen to really cool people talk about food-related stories and memories, and just everything that goes with that, head over to foodieflashback.com, where I post my awesome podcast.
Awesome. And Ian, where can people find you?
People can find me in the usual places here on a Thursday on The Big Show. And if I'm not here, have a look for me either in the Slack room at BTN on or I can be found on LinkedIn. It's one of the easiest places to find me usually. I'm there. You'll see me posting about our new upcoming conferences and stuff.
Nice. Nice. Tom, where can people find you?
I can be found on Mastodon as Tom F at sfba.social and in the BTN Slack.
Awesome. Well, this has been loads of fun. And I'm so glad that we had the time to do this today. I should tell people where to find me. Social media, Mastodon, Instagram. That's where I'm most active. Jay Gamut on both. Then most Tuesdays on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live. Then here on Thursdays for The Big Show. Then most Thursday evenings on Dave Ginsburg's In Touch with iOS. And then back on Fridays for The Mac Show. And then Brian Chaffin and I record at The Context Machine as well. And was it last week? I was on Charlotte Henry's The Edition, which was loads of fun. We talked about streaming shows and movies that we're really enjoying right now. It was a lot of fun. Anyhow, so I show up a lot. And thank you again for just being awesome. This has been so much fun today. And much to my surprise, we did not have to deal with that rogue contractor showing up to want to walk around my place while we're recording. Right? Yeah. Yeah. So anyhow, this has been great. This has been loads of fun. So thank you. And everyone that tuned in to watch or listen live, thank you for being here. It's so glad you're a part of this. If you've been participating in the live chat, like Ben Gillum just was, thank you for being part of that as well. If you watch or listen to the shows later, hey, thank you for being part of the BTN family as well. And Ewan, thank you just for being you. Muller, so glad that you are making sure we have people for the shows. And hey, feel better. Let's see, TSO hosts, thank you for being here supporting us. And I think I took care of making sure that everyone is appreciated. So with that, don't forget to join us tomorrow for tomorrow's the Mac Show. Mm-hmm. And then next Thursday, join us again for the Big Show. And everyone, thanks again and have a great weekend.